You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to The Scorecard.
The manly sport of golf, where you can dress like a pimp and no one will care.
Where we focus on Chicagoland and national golf news.
It's such an exciting athletic sport to whack the ball, get in the cart.
I whack the ball that goes in a gopher hole.
Oh, you mean like croquet?
Okay. I put the hole hundreds of yards away!
With your hosts, Mike Esposito.
What an incredible Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere to lead the pack.
And multimedia golf industry insider Barry Cronin.
You take drugs, Danny?
Every day.
Good. So what's the problem?
I don't know.
On 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
People be quieter. I'd like to hear the grass grow.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome in to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score and The Scorecard. We are here for you every Saturday morning from 6 to 8, and lots going on this week. As always, we've got the TPC Twin Cities going on this weekend, last weekend, the Memorial, and lots of news and other items along the way. Good morning, Barry Cronin.
Good morning, Mike Esposito. Always an honor to be with you, a true star in the Score universe.
Oh, I appreciate that, even though it's completely false. It's great to be with you as well, and great to be with our listeners. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Lots going on, Barry, and you know what? The weather's been beautiful here in the Chicago area. Hopefully you and our listeners, hopefully everyone's been getting out and playing some rounds. Another beautiful day coming up here today, it looks like. A little hot, but a lot of people will take it. I'm sure people driving out there right now would be very pleased with what Mother Nature has done for us here.
Well, you know, heat and humidity are a lot better than what we get in January.
Sure.
So it's a little bit easier to play today than it is in our bad weather months, which everybody, you know, endures in order to get to great summer days like we've had this past week. You're right. It's been fantastic, and I know a lot of people have been getting out, so it's great.
That is definitely one of the pluses of the things that have happened during the pandemic, is that whether forced to or kind of coerced into it, or saying, hey, you know what? What an idiot I have been. I haven't been golfing in as consistently as I would have liked to. That is certainly one of the nice things that has happened, is that people are getting back out there on the course. And certainly that will continue until Mother Nature tells us it can't.
Well, I've had people tell me, people who haven't played golf for 10 years or more, said, hey, you know what? I went out and played golf. And I'm like, really? You play golf? And, and maybe I would have played golf with that person maybe, you know, 10 years ago. And they go, oh, yeah, I know, I played golf at somewhere the other day. And I go, really? That's awesome, you know? And they go, well, there's nothing else to do. I'm going, well, not exactly a ringing endorsement for golf,
right.
But, you'll take it at this point.
Is that a compliment? Yes. No, and you know what? And we can talk about this
exactly.
with one of our guests as we talk about youth golf, Jim Nugent, when we talk to Jim. But I know a lot of kids in my neighborhood anyway. A lot of kids getting out. I've seen the caravans. I've talked to some of the dads and the moms, and I know a lot of kids are interested in the game. So hopefully that is boding well for the future. I know they are enjoying it. They take their lessons. They play their game. So much like
That's
Little
awesome.
League baseball. Yeah, much like Little League baseball.
Is it because there's just no day camps and no or mitigated youth sports like Little League? Is that what you're finding, Mike?
Yeah, it's some of that, but in some cases it is a conscious, hey, I'd like to try golf lessons. That is certainly the two particular families that I'm thinking of now. I know in both cases it was the kids who had asked about taking lessons. So that
cool.
That certainly is a ringing endorsement of the game, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And as we talked to Patrick Lynch a couple of weeks ago, who's out at Cantini, which has a great junior program, and you know, like Cantini, a lot of these junior camps are full. I just know, having talked to guys that I know in the industry, they're going great guns. So it's terrific to be able to introduce kids to golf at a young age, because a lot of times, you know, Mike, I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, you know, we didn't play golf. We just played a lot of baseball and football and basketball.
Yep.
And that type of thing.
Yep. We were in the same boat in my house. You know, golf was, you know, that was the more well-to-do guys down the block that might've gone to golf. And we were baseballers. We were baseballers in the summer,
right.
But, there is certainly no no reason why everyone cannot be out there playing some golf, right?
That's for sure. That's for sure. 100% well, now. Yep.
Well, we have a very good show coming up for everybody today. Want to welcome everyone in. Also, I should throw this out there too. If you'd like to communicate with us via text or via a call, it's the same number. It's 312-644-6767. Barry and I would be happy to hear from you as we do every week. A text or a call if you'd like to. I mentioned Jim Nugent. He's the founder, publisher of Global Golf Post. We'll talk to him about the Western Amateur, which is the third oldest amateur golf event in the world, 1899.
Right.
That's kind of
right.
Old. So
coming up this week.
Coming up this week. So we'll talk to Jim at 6:20. Swing Thoughts, our fine free advice segment, trying to get you guys a little instruction, if you will, on the game. Steve Coyce, the world long drive competitor, golf instructor. He's got a new series starting next week for CDGA members called Hitting Bombs, Bomb It Like Bryson. Bryson getting the shout-out amongst his breakout year. So we'll talk to Steve at 6:40, and then in our second hour, we'll talk to golf course architect Rick Jacobson. That will be right at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. He has designed scores of courses that you would recognize, and we'll talk to him about that. Jerry Zagoda, the longtime golf writer from the Minneapolis Star Tribune, will join us at 7:40. He is covering the 3M Open outside Minneapolis. And Barry, that's where we'll go now for a quick check-in. Your co-leaders at 12 under par, Michael Thompson and Ricky Wareski at 12 under, Tony Finau lurking at 11 under, along with Taylor Gooch. Another competitive weekend on the tour here. Two guys, though, and I was surprised to see this, that missed the cut. Brooks Koepka and Tommy Fleetwood missed the cut yesterday.
Yes, Brooks Koepka's been having a difficult time. He's had a knee injury. He had some surgery over the off season, mm-hmm. and just doesn't seem to be completely well. The other problem that he's been having over the last several weeks is he's just missing putts. I noticed yesterday, I mean, he missed, I don't know, three and four foot putts, which guys on the PGA Tour, you know, it's like you and I standing up to a 1-inch putt, and usually mm-hmm. they don't miss those, you know. Now
yep.
it's possible that they do, because also, if you notice on the PGA Tour, they stand over them and they study those short putts just as they would, you know, maybe a 10 footer. So because they respect mm-hmm. the fact that they can miss it, but
yep.
But he missed several yesterday, and wound up, I think he shot 72. And he had some a bad approach shots to the green where he left himself, short-sighted himself, couldn't get up and down. So that's kind of concerning for Koepka going into, well, next week will be Memphis. It'll be a big WGC event, World Golf Championship event. And then that's the week before the PGA Championship out at mm-hmm. Harding Park in San Francisco. So that's a problem for him. And of course, Fleetwood had spent last week. He came over from. He spent most of the pandemic. He's from England, right? He's from mm-hmm. Liverpool.
Yep.
Liverpool. So, and he talks just like George Harrison. I don't know. I heard him interviewed once from the other room. I heard him on TV. I thought, hey, what's George Harrison doing being interviewed
the Beatles
on the Golf Channel?
Right.
And it turns out it was Tommy Fleetwood. Anyway, he spent most of the pandemic over in England and then came over, I guess, a week or week and a half ago or whatever, and spent last week up in New York on Long Island playing all the great courses, Shinnecock Hills and National Golf Links, etc. But that was fun, and then he got to Minnesota, and he missed the cut. So, you know, it could just be a little adaptation to the old good old US of A. So it's unfortunate. Those are two big-name guys who I'm sure the you know, when you're the tournament director and the media director of these tournaments, you go, oh, boy, we want to have a big weekend and Brooks Koepka and Tommy Fleetwood in the finals, you know, et cetera. And then all of a sudden, bingo, they miss the cut. And you're like, oh, darn it, you know.
So
you've got a couple of guys at the top of the leaderboard in Werenski and Michael Thompson who, you know, obviously not household names, but obviously, you know, the... Even the guys you've never heard of are spectacular golfers.
Yes.
And so it could be a really good competitive weekend.
No, absolutely. And that's kind of the gist I was getting at, too, as I was watching the highlights and you know, reading more about the tournaments. And certainly Tony Finau is a big name, and he is playing some good golf. I read that he made a caddy move after last week at Memorial as well.
Right, that caddy, I can't remember his first name. Bodine is his last name. Because anyway, he'd been on Tony's bag since Tony came onto the PGA Tour about 6 years ago, and you know, sometimes you know, first they fire their driver or their putter, and then they fire their caddy. You know, and so I guess in order not to have to undergo an entire big swing change, he got rid of his caddy. So. You know, it's just a psychological thing. You know, sometimes you just need a change. And I mean, being together 6 years on the PGA Tour is really, you know, it's like a 40-year marriage. You know, it's pretty good.
Right.
So this week, his swing instructor Boyd Summerhays is on his bag, and he's having a good week. It's funny. I was thinking about. In 2012 at the old John Deere Classic, Zach Johnson won the tournament, but he won it with his instructor on the bag, Mike Bender, because his regular caddy, who'd been his caddy for forever until last year, Damon Green, had gone to play in a senior tour event. He's a real good player. Went to play in a senior tour event, and then, you know, he's off the bag, and then all of a sudden Zach wins the tournament. You know, so it's a golf in all these sports, as we know, Mike, at the highest level. There's a mental game, and so you know, Tony, just something different, and so we'll see what happens on the weekend. Though he's been playing really great in the first several weeks. He's been playing, you know, shooting under par rounds in his first two rounds of these tournaments, and then on the weekend, like last week at the Memorial, he was in great shape going into the final round, and he just kind of melted. And it was unfortunate to see, because he's such a good guy, and he's played on Ryder Cups and President Cup teams, and so obviously he's a great player, but we'll see what happens this weekend.
The PGA Tour is back. PGA coverage on the Score is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And speaking of last weekend, Barry, at the Memorial, Jon Rahm, your winner. Not only does he win the tournament, but he claims the number one ranking in the world. And, man, I didn't realize, maybe because, you know, I pay attention. You know, we're sports fans here on this show, and certainly at this station. Jon Rahm, I did not realize he was only 25 years old. Maybe it's because of how good and how consistent he's been. But he is, as I found out yesterday, the third youngest or the third fastest player to reach that number one ranking.
Right. It is. It seems like he's been around for a while, and he carries himself, Mike, you know, when you look at him on TV, he carries himself, you know, as a kind of a very mature guy. You know, he came over from Spain not knowing any English, and he went to Arizona State, and he became, as you can tell in his interviews, he's a very proficient English speaker. He stayed in college for 4 years, which was his goal. A lot of guys leave. You know, Matthew Wolf, he left after 1 year, and so did Spieth. But he stayed for 4 years. He learned English, and, you know, he came out on tour, but he seems like he's been around forever. He's because he's played on Ryder Cup teams, et cetera, and he carries himself very, very mature manner, and I really like him, and I think he's the first Spaniard to be ranked number one in the world since Seve Ballesteros.
Correct.
So
yep.
pretty good company to be in. Yeah, it's great to see him, and he's got a great personality. He's a really good dude. So it's nice to see him up there, and he did kind of come out of nowhere, didn't he, Mike? I mean, you don't really you know, he's hung around there in the top 10 for for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden, bingo, Rory's, you know, the other thing is Rory McIlroy was number one, and he's been having kind of a, you know, so-so year. Even before the pandemic, he wasn't doing great. And sometimes those world golf rankings don't flip quite as quick, you know, as you would think. You know, it's almost like a baseball team having a 10-game lead, and then they start playing terrible in August, and you know, they're losing their lead by one game every day, and then the second place team comes in and overtakes them.
69 Cubs fans getting bad flashbacks there.
There we go. Yep.
Well, and the other thing, too, and I'm sure you probably will get this very easily, but the only two players to do this faster age-wise than Rom, the first one is easy. The second one, I guess, if you think about it, is pretty easy, too. But it's Tiger Woods, of course, the fastest. And then the second one, which... I will give our listeners a second or two to try to formulate a guess. Barry, do you know the second one off the top of your head?
Well, I wonder if it's Jordan Spieth. I might be
you
wrong.
You are correct, sir. No, yeah. You are correct. See, that's why you're on.
See,
that's why
I know very little trivia. You know, I usually have to consult my friendly texters, you know, to tell me what's going on. But
well,
anyway,
you were spot on there. Your Cliff Clavin Cheers credentials are in order. So
I need those.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we're going to need them in a second. We're going to talk to Jim Nugent. He is the founder and publisher of Global Golf Post. We'll talk to him about the Western Amateur and lots more. We will do that next. It's Barry Cronin and Mike Esposito right here on The Scorecard on 670 The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we are back on The Scorecard, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Barry Cronin, my guest Vito, here with you every Saturday morning from 6 to 8. And we are glad that you are here with us. And we head on out now to the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. We are glad that Jim Nugent is with us. Jim is the founder and publisher of Global Golf Post. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on today.
Morning, Jim. Always good to talk to you. We've got the Western Amateur coming up this week, and that's it going to be held at Crooked Stick Golf Club down in Carmel, Indiana, right outside of Indianapolis. What am I thinking of? And I get my
Apples
mixed.
Is
my Apples is I don't want my Apples from my oranges. Anyway, so it's the Western Amateur going to be down at Crooked Stick Gym, and a great tournament, one of my favorites. 1899, it started right after the British Amateur and the U.S. Amateur. So, obviously, a tournament with incredible heritage and tradition, and just fantastic to be around.
You know, it is a spectacular amateur tournament. It is the second most important amateur tournament in the world, really, after the U.S. Amateur. It gets an incredibly strong field year in and year out. Until 2008, it was played every year at Point of Woods Golf Club over in Benton Township, Benton Harbor, Michigan. But beginning in 2009, they made a change and they started bringing the tournament to the Chicagoland area and rotating it among some of our great golf courses, Conway Farm, Skokie, North Shore, Exmoor, Sunset Ridge. But they've also, in an effort to expand the awareness of it, they've taken it on the road a little bit. In 2013, it was at the Emotion Club in Arkansas. Last year, it went back to Point of Woods after a long break. This year, it's in, as you said, it's in Indianapolis. But really, for the most part, the Western Amateur now is a Chicago-based amateur championship. And as I said, one of the very best championship fields in the world.
And Jim, just to give the listeners who may not be up on amateur golf an idea, so who are some of the champions that have come out of this tournament and then gone on to be household names on the PGA Tour?
Well, you might have heard of this kid that played some golf at Stanford a little while. His name was Tiger Woods. He won the tournament in 1994. Justin Leonard, Phil Mickelson, Curtis Strange, Ben Crenshaw. This tournament has produced some outstanding champions over the years that have gone on to not just play well on the PGA Tour, but find themselves in the World Golf Hall of Fame.
Right. I think Jack Nicklaus won in 1961. That was a big one down in Louisiana somewhere.
Jack Nicklaus won in New Orleans at New Orleans Country Club in 1961. I forgot about that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he was good. And then you look at their Sweet 16, the guys who make it into match play after their it is a who's who on the PGA Tour. The other thing, Jim, I think people don't understand, and you compare it to the U.S. Amateur, just in terms of how difficult it is as a tournament. Explain to the folks, how hard a tournament is and how grueling it is.
Well, it's actually almost two tournaments in one, and it's called, some people have nicknamed it Amateur Golf's Greatest Grind. You play 72 holes stroke play in August or late July, so it's typically pretty warm, and that's pretty grueling. And for most of these kids, and they are kids, they're college players, that's a tournament in and unto itself. But at the end of 72 holes, the top 16, as you refer to them, the Sweet 16, go on to a match play playdown. And so 16 players go into match play, and a champion is produced. It's not too terribly frequent that a player wins both, becomes a medalist in stroke play, and then wins the championship. But it has happened from time to time. And for those very rare players who have done both, been the medalist of the stroke play and won the tournament proper, that's really quite an achievement on your amateur resume.
Yeah.
This hour brought to you by Glenview Park Golf Club. Experience the best at Glenview Park Golf Club. Call 847-724-0250 or book online at golfglenview.com. Jim, like everything else this year, this is going to be an event without fans. Do you think, in terms of the amateurs and the college guys that you have there playing golf, how much does that matter when you're dealing with college-age kids?
It won't matter to these kids at all, because college tournaments, summer elite amateur events, typically have very, very few spectators to begin with. Kind of your mom, your dad, your girlfriend. There's an occasional agent roaming the grounds doing some recruiting. It's really, and then the members of the club really are probably the biggest contingent of people. I don't know what they're doing as far as the members at Crooked Stick this year, but I think I saw that there's no spectators whatsoever. But it's not going to affect these kids. This is how they play college golf. This is how they play amateur golf.
Right. And Jim, I noticed that a young man named Preston Summerhays, who is a member of the unbelievable golf family, the Summerhays golf family, his I don't know if it's his uncle who's on, who's carrying Tony Finau's bag, who's his instructor. So the Summer Hazes are all over the place, as always in golf. So he won the Preston, won the Susquehanna amateur yesterday. And, you know, he's a pretty awesome player, I imagine. And I know he's playing in the Western Amateur. Are there other names that obviously, we don't know any of the names of the kids that are playing in this tournament. Nobody really does, right? So, but are there any names that you should pay attention to?
Well, after yesterday when Preston Summerhays won the Son of Hannah, you really got to pay attention to him, and it's his father who's on the bag for Tony Finau.
Oh, his father. Okay, great.
The Summerhays is Utah golf royalty, and Preston is the next iteration of that. He's the reigning U.S. junior champion, so the kids, that wasn't a fluke. He can really play some. The kid that I'm keeping my eye on is a guy named Ricky Castillo from Yorba Linda, California.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow Ricky Castillo found his way to the University of Florida in Gainesville, Florida, to play his college golf. I cannot explain how that happened. I cannot imagine how the college coaching community in California feels about it. But he's the second-ranked amateur in the world. He was playing his freshman year before the pandemic hit and was having an extraordinary freshman year. He was an All-American. He won a couple of times. This kid's got a really, really bright future. So Ricky Castillo is the inside tip for those that want to get their money down on the Western
All
Amateur.
All right. Now, does DraftKings do a Western Amateur thing at all, Jim, or no?
I don't know, Bear. Let's talk to him about that and see what we can arrange.
We'll have to get them on the show next week and find out how deep they go.
Well, and Jim, I was curious, too, as you were talking there about Mr. Castillo, how do they determine the field? Let's say you're a college golfer. You want to get into the field. You want to play in the Western Amateur. How is that field determined, and who is doing the determining?
The Western Amateur is run by the same folks here in the Chicago area that run what we all once knew as the Western Open. It's now the BMW Championship, the Western Golf Association, that all of their time, effort, and the money that they raise goes to the Evans Scholar Program. So they conduct the championship, and it's an invitational field. They select the players that they want to play. You can apply, and sometimes kids that apply are selected, but really their goal is to assemble the best possible field. And the marker for that is something called the World Amateur Golf Rankings. They want to get as many of the top players from the World Amateur Golf Rankings in the field. So they select them, they invite them. I think without knowing, it's been a bit of a challenge this year because the international players, probably the international piece of the field is probably not as deep as it once was, because if you are an international kid, you come to America, I think you got to quarantine for 2 weeks no matter where you fly into. So I don't expect that the internationals are as deep as one would think. But this tournament, year in and year out, has the best players, the best amateur players of college age in the field every single year.
Yeah. It sure does, and it's always, just being around that tournament, just always would encourage people who are average golfers, and you know, to come out. Here's a place. Obviously, it's not going to be in Chicago this year, but next year it'll be back. To go out and watch these guys play, because you can learn a lot. A, you see how good they are, and B, you can just get up close, because there are no rope lines, nothing like that, and. You know, as long as you're polite, you could just get as pretty much as close as you want to get, Jim. It's just really a cool thing to see.
You know, one of the other things that takes place, Barry, when it's in Chicago at the various clubs that I mentioned, is that the members of the club house these players.
Right.
And as a result of that, some long-term relationships and friendships are made. I know that when North Shore, where I'm where I play, had it several years ago, some of my friends that house these young men continue to keep in touch with them all these years later, and to watch how they have gone through the game. And that happens every year where it's played. And it's an oddity, but a very, very nice aspect of a club being able to host a championship of this caliber.
Yeah. And you mentioned, Jim, that obviously it's in down near Indianapolis this year, but it'll be back in the Chicago area anytime soon?
It is coming back to Chicago next year. I'm not sure exactly. I think next year, is it Glenview Club?
Yes, exactly right. Glenview Club, 100% right. Yep.
I think Glenview's got it. I know that North Shore is committed to having it. It's going to continue its rota of Glenview Club, North Shore, Knollwood, Conway Farms, Skokie. And as I said, every once in a while, they're going to go someplace else as they have this year. But it is essentially now a Chicago-based amateur championship. And you're right, your listeners really would benefit from going out there and seeing, you know, these fresh-faced young kids who are really, really talented and they can hit the ball off the planet.
Right. I mean, I just remember seeing Jordan Spieth. He played over at North Shore, and he was getting a lot of national publicity even then.
You'll see them all. You know, every good college age player in a normal year from around the world is here. Jordan was certainly here. Justin Thomas played here. More locally, yeah. Dylan Meyer won the tournament in 16. Dylan's from the University of Illinois. He won at Knollwood that year. This is a mandatory stop on the summer schedule for any good playing college golfer.
And I think back in, I think it was 90 or 91, Jim, when they had it down at Point of Woods, and the then tournament director, Peter DeYoung, invited Michael Jordan to play. And of course, that was when the Western Amateur really got on everybody's radar. I remember going down there and covering the tournament, and because Michael was having a press conference and everything, it was really exciting to be around and to see that. Poor Phil, you know, Michael actually was hitting it in the fairway that day, and Phil was all over the place. And of course, he got up and down from, like, you know, underneath the trees and all that kind of thing. It was so fun to see, and he beat Michael by like 12 strokes. And but it was just really a lot of fun to watch.
That was a bit of a sideshow. It was kind of witty and interesting at the time. But that was one of the great final pairings in Western Amateur history. Phil Mickelson played Justin Leonard in the finals and beat him 2-1 at Point of Woods that year. Hmm. Yeah, in recent years, Tony Romo has made a cameo appearance at the Western Amateur. Not this year. In fact, I think he withdrew from a Korn Ferry event yesterday because he's hurt.
Yep, he did.
But occasionally, you know, a celebrity kind of guy like that will slip in the field. Usually they can't they can't hang with the young guys, and never do they advance the match play. One thing I mentioned about the format that I forgot, there's also a 36-hole cut in the stroke play portion. So you got to play good. You got to go low in those first two rounds if you got any hope of playing the final two rounds, much less going to match play.
Right.
Well, Jim, we certainly appreciate your time this morning, and thanks for all the information. We'll be watching at the Western Amateur next weekend, and again, appreciate your time today.
Guys, thanks for having me on. Cheers.
Thanks, Jim.
Cheers. Jim Nugent, founder, publisher of Global Golf Post, talking about the Western Amateur, and I'm sure Jordan was thrilled getting paced by Phil Mickelson back there in 1991, Barry.
Justin Leonard. Well, yeah, you know, he lost 2-1, which means that he was 2 down with 1 hole to play. So that's pretty yeah. close match, and so you know, it's a two future Ryder Cup teammates,
sure.
Phil Mickelson and Justin Leonard, and so it's good. It was good.
Absolutely. Experience the best at Glenview Park Golf Club. Country club conditions at public club prices. Book online at golfglenview.com. That's golfglenview.com. Or call us in the golf shop, 847-724-0250, 847-724-0250. Speak with one of our friendly golf shop staff, Golf Glenview. Experience the best. Coming up next, our Swing Thoughts segment, we will talk to a world long drive competitor. He wants to teach you how to bomb that ball. His name is Steve Coyce. We'll talk to Steve next here on The Scorecard on The Score.
Just let it happen. Be the ball. Be the ball, Danny. You're not being the ball, Danny.
Well, it's kind of difficult with you talking like
okay.
that.
Okay, I'm not talking. Stop talking.
And now, the scorecard presents Swing Thoughts, some free advice from the best teachers in the game.
And we are back on the scorecard. This segment brought to you by Basement Water Stoppers. When your basement leaks, you need help now, not months from now. Call Basement Water Stoppers today. They'll see you within 72 hours for a free professional evaluation and repairs within hours. Call Basement Water Stoppers, 888-426-3074, 888-426-3074. And we are pleased now to be joined by Steve Coyce. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, for our Swing of Thoughts segment. Anyone with a show called Hitting Bombs, Bomb It Like Bryson is a guy I want to talk to, and Steve is that man. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on, Steve. We really appreciate it. You know, I remember last week we sit here lecturing. We had Jamie Fisher on from Conway Farms. We were talking about the short game, how important it is and how you should practice your chipping and putting. And I feel like that's like telling an eight-year-old to eat his vegetables, right? Because nobody wants to practice that. Everybody just wants to hit bombs like you, and you are going to teach us to hit bombs, right, Steve? What's the you're on the long drive group, and you hit it like 442 was your longest drive, which is pretty unbelievable, and a swing speed of 223 miles an hour. So how do you translate to the average guy?
So everybody does like that. If you're going out helping your score, or you just want to bomb it past your buddies, like you said, we're starting this four-part series, Hitting Bombs, where I'm kind of showing you exercises and drills to just add some distance to your game. Barry, you and I were talking a while ago about the sequence, and a lot of instructors mention sequence in their swing, starting with your hips and the ground, and that's awesome. You should do that. But sometimes the feeling should be with your hands. And I know that's counterintuitive to some golfers, but if you can whip it, if you can whip your hands through, you're going to get a lot more speed.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, we're talking to Steve Coyce, world long drive competitor. You're also a certified personal trainer and golf instructor. So I imagine all of this, and you kind of alluded to there, all of this kind of packages and comes together in what you do and when you're training people as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's a lot of fun because I get to both do it out on the tour, on the world long drive tour and other events, and then also help people to do it. And like you said, everybody wants to hit it far.
Right. So with regard to your hands, Steve, as you say, everybody, you know, other teachers will tell you, oh, you got to drive your legs and you got to do this and that. And a lot of people, I think, now say, well, take your hands out of it. So we were talking about different types of players. For example, Steve Stricker is renowned for not using his hands. And yet you see a guy like a Lucas Glover or a Sergio Garcia who whip the club like they're whipping a horse or being on the back of a little wagon train, whipping their horses going across country. Explain the difference.
So I think even in someone like Steve Stricker, if you look at all of the tour pros, they have different backswings, setups, things like that. But kind of that tour move coming down into the ball and through the ball is a proper release of the hands. So like I said, the sequence does start with the lower body, but you don't want to forget the end of the sequence, which I would say is the most important part, and actually releasing the club head. So a little drill you can do to kind of illustrate that. If you take your driver and put it kind of under your arm in your armpit there, and try to turn as fast as you can, that's going to be really slow. Your body just can't move that fast. But if you whip it with your hands and get that last part of the sequence, that's when you get a lot of speed.
Wow. Steve, when you were coming up in this, how did long drive come to you? Is this something you were just naturally good at? Is this something that you said, hey, I want to be good at this and I want to try this, I want to do this? How did this work in your case?
Thankfully, it did kind of come to me naturally. I've always hit it really far in high school golf, college golf tournaments and stuff like that. But then 2015, I decided I'd go and try the World Long Drive Championship. And I did pretty well. Actually, my first drive I hit in competition was 419 yards. So I was like, all right, that's a good start. I can do this. So I just kind of kept going from there. But it's actually an exciting time for me now because I'm going to be getting back into some tournament golf with Korn Ferry and PGA qualifiers coming up. So kind of bringing that distance back to the course.
Yeah. Yeah. What move or what can average golfers do in order to kind of get their hands into it without overemphasizing that? You know, a lot of times people might be driving to the course right now and listening to you saying, all right, now today I'm going to get my hands into it. What are the dangers of thinking that way, and how do you actually get your hands into it?
So, yeah, I mean, there are dangers to, I think, any swing thought if you overdo it. But right. Go out and try it, because a lot of times I've seen, especially higher handicappers, that maybe if you slice the ball, you do not release your hands. You can't really slice the ball and release your hands at the same time. So just go out on the driving range and maybe flip the club upside down and try to get that whoosh, that speed at impact and past impact. And you'll feel and you'll hear it. And that's your hands working.
And you're doing this series, I believe it starts next week. Is that right? And you've got it's a four-part series?
Yeah, it starts in 2 days on Monday. We're going to put out the first video. It's all about your lower body, how to use your lower body. And then we're going to get into kind of the role of that final release where your hands do come into play. But, I mean, it all plays a role. You need to have the whole system working together. But you don't want to forget about the hands. Because, like I said, that's kind of the last part, which I would say is maybe the most important part.
For sure. And then one of your sessions is going to be on mobility, the other one on core, and then on speed, putting it all together. What do you mean by mobility?
So every golfer needs kind of a range of motion that you might not use in a normal day if you're not out on the golf course. So if it's your upper back being able to extend into good posture and then rotate, anytime the spine is flexed, it can't rotate very well. So, you know, try that out as well. When you go out there, stand up a little taller, set up well with good posture at the ball, but also the little things like your joints being able to rotate properly in the socket, your hips, for example, your shoulders, things like that, that actually play a big role. So maybe you have a kind of a quirky swing characteristic. It might be because of a mobility issue where you just can't move in a different range.
Last few minutes here with Steve Coyce, World Long Drive competitor and personal trainer. So the show is called Hitting Bombs, Bomb It Like Bryson. And Bryson has been a huge story this year on the tour. He's bulked up. You know, he spent his lockdown time hitting weights, which is evident in his physique. How much of long drive, in your opinion, how much of it is, you know, strength, physique, you know, building that muscle? How much of it is other factors?
My answer has changed over the years, to be honest. Starting off, I thought it was a lot about strength. But then I've known a lot of strong people who can't hit the ball anywhere. And I think it's in part going back again to what I was saying, the sequence and the release. If you try to muscle the ball, it's not going to work very well. So there are some really long hitters who are not strong, but they get that sequence right. They whip the club head through, and they get a ton of speed. So honestly, it varies a lot, which should be encouraging to the average listener, because they might not be the strongest or they might not be the most flexible, but they can make it work for themselves and hit it probably farther than they're doing right now.
Hey, Steve, how do if people are interested in listening to you and doing this little course, really, it's almost like a webinar or whatever. How do you access it? What do you do?
So the CDGA, Chicago District Golf Association, is going to be putting that out the next 4 weeks. So join them. They're going to be sending that out in the weekly newsletter. Follow me on Instagram. I'm going to be putting stuff out similar or links to it there. And, yeah, that'll do it.
You mentioned
your Instagram. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mike.
I was going to ask the same question. Your Instagram is, Steve, for our listeners who want to check it out.
It's Coyce Fit, my last name, Kois.
Awesome. Well, that's cool. That's good. I know a lot of people who'll be interested in hitting it far. And you're right about people like, you know, look at Justin Thomas. I mean, he's about 150 pounds. You can't even believe it. And he hits it like a mile. He doesn't hit it as far as Bryson, but I don't know. Do you think Bryson, like, I mean, his whole body, it's crazy. You know, you wonder, you're a fitness guy. You're a personal trainer. I mean, he's become almost unnatural in terms of his body type. I kind of worry about him physically, you know, when he hits age 40. What's he going to be?
Well, we have seen him make a lot of changes, and I think that's, indicative of the fact he probably won't stay where he is now forever. So, I mean, obviously he's a very smart guy and calculates everything. So he'll probably keep searching, finding the right weight for him and size and speed. But I think he's doing a lot of really cool things that probably other tour players and amateur golfers can learn from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely definitely a bit of a trailblazer, I think, and people kind of looked at him funny when he first came back this year when the tour first came back, but he's playing well, and he's hitting bombs, so there you go.
He's an excuse for overeating, too, so that's why I like him.
There you go. Yeah. Well, Steve, we appreciate your time this morning. Good luck on the show, and we'll be checking it out. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks,
all righty. Thank you, Steve. That's Steve Coyce. The show is called Hitting Bombs, Bomb It Like Bryson. It starts next week for CDGA members. Interesting, Barry, because that's where, you know, I'm a regular sized dude. I guess I'm about 185, 190 pounds. You know, I certainly have no, bodybuilder's physique, but I've always wondered, you know, when you're talking about the, you know, the traits of that long drive. I know some of it is strength, but how much of it is strength and how much of it is exactly the thing Steve was talking about, the different factors all throughout the entire drive process?
Yeah, it's really interesting. For example, you know, Matthew Wolf, who's, fifth place or whatever this year, I mean, he hits it 10 miles. He's about 5'9", 5'10". He's not an overly bulky kind of guy. He's got a super weird swing, and just totally unconventional, and yet he hits it a mile. Justin Thomas, like I said, a tall string bean of a guy, he hits it a mile, you know. And I think it's because they, you know, believe me, I'm an amateur epidemiologist, I'm also an amateur golf observer, but it just seems like the speed of their hips when they come through and just swing the club, and they deliver it in a perfect tempo every time, that they're able to whip the club through it at a very high swing speed. I mentioned that Steve Coyce, our guest, had a high swing speed of 223 miles an hour, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So yeah. What Bryson was doing a couple of weeks ago was he was just about hitting 200 miles an hour. So that's really the key. And if you can get the if you can get the club through it at a very high speed, that's what matters. And of course, if you hit it on the club face and you hit it in the right timing, it'll actually go in the fairway, which is what's interesting about
too.
Bryson.
Uh-huh.
Right, but the thing about it is Bryson has been hitting it in the fairway with some regularity, which is really good.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is the challenge. Can you do it while you're playing in the tournament? And he has certainly been doing it. We need to take a break. When we come back, hour two here on the scorecard, we'll talk to renowned golf course architect Rick Jacobson. He's done a number of the courses that you have played at and that you know and love. We'll talk to Rick next here on the scorecard on the Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.